This is Hometown Heroes. Honoring everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes. Our guest today is 91 years old, but he really doesn't sound like it, does he? Purple Heart recipient George Hansen served in a machine gun squad with the 11th Armored Division, part of Patton's 3rd Army in Europe in World War II. Speaking of, what'd you think of him, General Patton, old blood and guts?
You know, to me, he was a hero. I only saw him once as we were in an armored column. I saw him standing on a hill looking with binoculars to the front. And you could see one of his pistols on his right side. And there he is looking through binoculars. That's as close as I ever got to him. But we respected him.
VE Day. Where were you guys when you found out that Germany had surrendered?
We were on the Danube River in Austria and looked across the river. We could see the Russians who had arrived. So that's where. And of course, we knew it was coming. The last few days, we could see that the Germans were retreating. The last towns, but they always left as they retreated some people like machine gunners to slow us down. And I know walking into one town as we came in, it was a dirt road, and one of those machine gunners was shooting at me, and I could see the bullets splattering around my feet, but not one hit my foot. And once again, I thought, wow, that's pretty neat. That guy wasn't very good at shooting people.
Did you guys celebrate that news at all, that Germany had surrendered?
You know, I don't remember celebrating. Of course, we were happy. And then my first assignment after that was to stay on a farm, the 12 of us, and we took over this farmhouse. And our job was to collect German soldiers that might not have heard that the war was over. And some of them were separated, and they'd be in the woods or somewhere hiding, and then one by one they'd come out and we would take them back to headquarters for interrogation. And that was wonderful on this farm right in the bottom of the Swiss Alps, and they had horses. I've ridden a horse a couple of times, but for 2 weeks we were there and we would take turns taking a horse and just riding in the hills. A wonderful vacation.
You mentioned collecting prisoners. You were also collecting some stuff to bring home. You mentioned all the pistols and the sword that you still have around here. How did you end up with all that contraband or all those spoils of war?
Well, we were allowed, we shouldn't go taking other things, which sometimes we did, but guns and anything armored we could take. And that night that I slept in the president of Germany's home, he had all kinds of swords and daggers and guns, hunting rifles. I took some of the swords from that place and put them in my half track. Then I got other like daggers and guns that I picked up here and there.
What comes to mind when you look at those now?
Well, they were a big help to me because I always wanted to take flying lessons, and I sold this this Luger, which is one of the top German pistols. I sold it for $500, which was enough to get me started in pilot training later on.
Funny how that worked out. One thing that's interesting, because people have different stories or different ways that they found out or different levels of understanding about this, but as you were fighting over there, at what point did you become aware of what the Nazi regime had been doing to the Jewish people and to some of these other political prisoners or persecuted peoples who were in the concentration camps being killed or tortured?
Well, one of the guys in my squad was Jewish, and he had a hatred for Germans that was very strong. And I can understand why, because maybe some of his relatives had been in all those persecutions and even killed. He never told me a lot of details, but I knew he had a powerful hate against Germans. During the last weeks or days of the war, the Germans had all but given up. And we in this armored column would go by, and I still remember this place where they had American prisoners, and the guys came out and shouted. We didn't even stop, but they were up there on a little hill just waving, and you could tell they were so happy. And then we came across a field that was mostly Hungarians. They would jump up and down with excitement, and one of those really bad camps where they were later killed. I don't remember if we passed one of those or not. But all during this time, I had a growing desire to someday be a missionary, and I wanted first to go to Europe, where I see all the destruction and upheavals and how Jews are treated. I wanted to go there as a missionary and teach people about God's love. And that's why, when the war ended, my mind was decided I wanted to be a missionary somewhere and help people like these poor people that I saw over there.
Well, you didn't have much choice after that deal you had made before the war, huh?
Yeah, but this time I didn't feel like it was something I had to do. Now it's something I want to do, and that's the way God works.
So you come back here to the States, you finish up at Westmont before going to seminary, and I guess it's a pretty good thing that you went back to Westmont, because you had to encounter a certain someone, didn't you? What do you remember about how you met Joyce?
Well, you know, some guys wanted to get married before they went overseas so they'd have a taste of marriage before the end. I had no desire, but now I did. And I still remember going to Westmont and seeing this blonde girl in the line. We'd go through the line and they'd service our dinner all dished up. And I thought, I'd like to meet that gal, which I arranged a way to meet her. Talked to her and asked her what her name was and found out a little bit about her. And from there on, it was a growing friendship. And one day I asked her if she ever wanted to be a missionary, and she said, nope. And I said, well, if God showed you that was what he wanted you to do, would you be? And she says, I believe I would. So we got married. That was my proposal.
You made her quite a deal there. Well, and that would be what the future held for you, because you two would become missionaries and spent 24 years in Brazil. I know it's probably hard to condense 24 years into a few minutes, but can you give us a taste of what you experienced there, what fulfillment you drew from it, and what all those years taught you?
Well, we went to a city way up on the top of Brazil, just south of the equator, a city of about 10,000 people. We went there to start a church. And it was a town where the Bible was a forbidden book. And sometimes when these Bibles were given away or sold, they would be collected by religious leaders. One little boy one day saw them being burned on a street corner, Bibles. But that's the kind of place I wanted to go. So we would give a portion of this Bible, like the Gospel of John, to people and say, hey, do you want to read the Bible? One by one, people would read it, and a lot of them became interested, became Christians. But the knowledge of Jesus was really not known. In fact, for 2 years, I didn't have a car, and then I got a used American World War II Jeep. Now I could go out of town, and I picked up this guy who was hitchhiking, and he got in the car, and he said, oh, I'm only going about a mile down the road, so that bit will really help to have a ride. So I thought, I better talk to him about Jesus pretty soon. I didn't know where to start, so I said, do you know why Jesus died? And he said, I can still remember how he said it in Portuguese. He said, I didn't even know he was sick. I found out later that Jesus is a name that some parents gave kids. But his knowledge was zilch. He didn't know anything about Jesus. And I thought, that's why I'm here. And what a blessing to be in a place where you can tell people who Jesus really is.
In those 24 years in Brazil, did you ever have days where you said, what in the world am I doing here? I'm not cut out for this?
My wife had those feelings more than I did. In fact, there was a plane that went by our town most every night. It was picking up people from along the coast and going to the big city of Belém, which is on the mouth of the Amazon. And then they would catch a big plane to the States. My wife said she was often tempted to jump on that plane. But those were just some of those days when things got a little tough.
And you're continuing to serve at River Park Bible Church. You told us you play the French horn in the orchestra. I know that's fun. But you're a lot busier than that. You're all over the place going to see people and try to comfort them. Tell me what your role is now at River Park Bible Church.
Well, you know, I fill in here and there and little things, but I guess the one I use the most time for is visiting people just to encourage them and have prayer together.
Where does your motivation come from? What keeps you visiting people and ministering to people? And how long are you going to do that?
Well, you know, Paul mentioned Proverbs 3, 5, and 6. And it says, trust in the Lord with all your heart. And then it says, in all you do, acknowledge him. Include God in your plans. And I haven't always done that. And even today, sometimes I don't check out how I spend my time with God to make sure it's a worthy thing, a way to spend time. But it says, if you trust him, he will direct your path. And I think I'm where God wants me to be. And God has blessed me with so many wonderful friends. I was just amazed when I got back from Washington last week that all the people from my church, I don't know why they came. They came just to welcome us back, even though you were what you call a real hero. They treated us like heroes. And I just love people and love being around people. So I'm doing what I enjoy doing.
Well, and it's easy to see that that's the case. And you mentioned coming back from Washington. That was with Central Valley Honor Flight. You got to go with 64 other veterans to see the World War II Memorial and some of the other sites in Washington, D.C. What did you glean from that experience? What was the most fulfilling aspect of it for you?
You know, was it this monument or that monument? Not really. You know, I'll tell you the thing that impressed me the most is just the fact that there are some people that love America and they appreciate the military. That trip cost thousands of dollars, and it wasn't government money. It was people's money that gave to pay for this trip that I had free. And that made a tremendous impression on me. And then just see God's love through people, like the ones in my church that came out there to just say, hey, welcome home. I think that was the biggest impression I had. But all the memorials, too, was interesting. And I'm thankful for our country that honors thousands and thousands of tombstones out there around Washington. And from the Vietnam War, names by the thousands of people that gave their life. And our country appreciates that. My prayer is that our country will be a country that continues honoring God and putting him first. And that's my desire for my country.
I've got to ask you, I don't want to be melodramatic, but it comes to my mind, and I'm sure some of our listeners are thinking the same thing. When you got to that World War II memorial and you saw that wall of gold stars representing more than 400,000 Americans that didn't come home from the war, did you find yourself reflecting on all those times you came pretty close to adding to that number?
Oh, yeah, I don't think about it every day, but on occasion you do. And I just say, thank you, God, for sparing me, because he did. A lot, they didn't make it. And I'm thankful for them that they were willing to go.
And I know your son and your daughters and your grandkids and great-grandkids are thankful that you came back, because they wouldn't be here otherwise. Are you proud of your service? Do you feel that you and those 16 million other Americans who served and all the folks back home supporting you, that you accomplished something important during those years?
You know, I think it was important, but I also think that, you know, it was a job just like any other job. You sign up and you do what the boss tells you to do. So going to Europe, it was a government job. I still think about all the policemen around us in Fresno and everywhere, and sometimes they don't get treated very well, and I think they're the ones that we need to be honored, because I was in harm's way for a few months, but policemen are in harm's way every day for year after year. So I'm thankful for them.
Well, before I forget, I want to say thank you for serving our country. Thank you for telling us a little bit about your experiences. In closing, is there something that you would say you're most thankful for or most proud of?
Well, I'm thankful that I grew up in a Christian home and that my parents told me about Jesus, who died on the cross to save me from hell, which I deserve. I'm just thankful for that, and I'm thankful that God's kept me alive. I just feel honored and blessed.
Well, it's been an honor sharing your story with our audience today. If you want to see what a good-looking soldier George Hansen was 70 years ago and what he looks like today, check out the photos at hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. We're out of time today. Thank you very much for listening. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you again that freedom is not free.